It's 8:15 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, in our monthly update of development projects in Summit County, on the phone with me, I have Summit County Development Director Pat Putt. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, Leslie.
So any update on the South Point proposal at Promontory? My understanding, the property is still owned by the Pivotal Group, managed by Francis Najafi and Rich Sontag, but taken out of the Promontory master plan as a separate development?
No, it's still part of the overall Promontory specially planned development agreement. There's just a separate subsection for that right now. So it's still part of the broader umbrella. What we've been in review of is a request to take a look at the would be sort of the southernmost portion of the development area, and it's about 800 acres in that basin just to the north of the Browns Canyon Road. And the application that we have currently is a request to amend that portion of the SPA, the development agreement, and increase the residential units. There's a proposal for a hotel and additional commercial. A fairly extensive list of proposed changes. I'd be happy to go over them with you. They're extensive. We could probably take the whole time talking about that, but what can I tell you?
One of them is, I mean, what we have heard is that there's a juvenile detention center being proposed.
No, as part of any specially planned area, part of the discussion and the review of that is an evaluation of public benefits. And there's a number of public benefits that are being proposed. One of those would involve providing a site for an intake center for the Children's Justice Center. Not exactly within this South Point area. I think the developer is looking for other property in or around the Promontory area that might be able to serve that particular use. So that's part of a broader basket of proposed community benefits that have been provided as part of the application.
All right. How big of a hotel are we talking about?
About 350 rooms is what their application involves.
All right. And in terms of the density that was awarded to this area, is that, are we still talking about the same numbers?
No. I mean, here's what's currently on the books for that piece of the property. It's about, well, there's two private golf courses. There were 150 larger estate lots. So these would be the larger single-family home lots. And then what they call the resort cabins, the smaller residential standalone buildings. There was 100 of those. There was a golf clubhouse that was proposed. This is the area that the Promontory Development Agreement has anticipated being the location for their employee housing. And what that is on the books and consisting of would be about 35 units equating to 80 bedrooms. So that would still need to be part of this consideration, as well as covering any additional employee housing that would be generated by that. What is being proposed, if I can attempt to be concise here, is modifying that with a change that would propose a little over 1,000 residential units. I think the number is 1,020. The 350 hotel rooms and 190,000 square feet of commercial use. Right now, where we are in the process is that this is out for interagency service provider review, and that's an extensive punch list of departments and agencies. There was one preliminary meeting that staff had with that entire group just to explain what the application involves. And so we're now kind of collecting those comments. Ultimately, this will lead to the initiation of a series of work sessions that will build towards some public hearings with the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission. And that's probably an important thing to note as visible as Promontory is and as in most people's minds really part of the Snyderville Basin. It's not part of the Snyderville Basin's planning area. This is an Eastern Summit County planning jurisdiction project. So when this thing begins to work its way through the hearing process, it will be with the Eastside Planning Commission and not the Basin Planning Commission. I would anticipate those discussions with the commission beginning as early as, you know, April. So there's a lot of process ahead of us on this one.
Yeah. So how do you get from, 250 units to 1,000?
Well, that's through the specially planned area process. Again, it's a negotiation-based review, additional density in exchange for additional public benefits and the ability to offset the potential impacts of the proposal at hand. It's a long and arduous process to get through that evaluation and that decision, but ultimately, at the end of the day, the Planning Commission will need to make a recommendation, and Council will be in a position to make a final evaluation if, one, this is an appropriate change to the development approval, B, if those proposed changes can be adequately addressed and serve in terms of services and reducing whatever those legitimate impacts resulting from that increase in the development are, and then is there a sufficient number of positive public benefits that go along with that project that not only outweigh the impacts, but, you know, create a reason for considering doing this to approve that. And that's going to be a very detailed and likely lengthy discussion.
All right. So do we do away with the golf courses and clubhouse? Or those still remain? Is that part of the commercial?
I think that's going to be part of the overall review of the master plan. More to discuss on that.
Sure. And, of course, we've got Rich Sontag, again, with the Pivotal Group. He has stepped down as general manager of Promontory. But, again, my understanding was that they took this parcel out and formed a separate LLC to develop it.
Well, I think the key thing for the listeners out there to understand is this is still within the umbrella of the broader Promontory Spa and the development agreement. How that relates to the existing development in terms of relationship with homeowners associations, that's separately addressed through this change. But in terms of what the entitlements are now, what the deliverables, the obligations, all those remain the same.
All right. Now, Rich Sontag, of course, a member of the Eastside Planning Commission. How does he handle that? Recuse himself from the commission and then?
Yep. He'll need to recuse himself from any of these discussions in moving forward.
So he can't even make the presentation before the Planning Commission?
Correct.
All right. And would you expect this to get to the Eastside Planning Commission this month?
No. The timing issues that we have, and I've had a discussion with the applicant, Rip, and his design team. We're at a point in the year where we're going to be renewing and looking at the membership on the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission. Two of the planning commissioners are terming out. That's Chris Uhrer and Ken Henry. We have one new commissioner, Don Sargent, obviously, but my interest is in beginning this discussion once we have our two new planning commissioners seated. Two members of a commission, I think, are a substantial number. May not be a majority, may not be a quorum, but I want to make sure that when we begin this public education process on this application, that we don't have to, one, do it twice, or do it where on such a big, important project, we have to bring two key new planning commissioners back up to speed. And so the timing is such, it's good. We're still working through the service provider feedback. while that's happening, I'm confident we're going to probably have that that commission appointment process completed as well. So I don't anticipate that happening here in March. Earliest would be April, I think.
All right. Let's see. Your reaction to Judge Pettit's decision against the motocross track at Sunrise Hills?
Well, back a few weeks ago, Judge Pettit, determined that Summit County was not barred from regulating or prohibiting the motocross track there in Wanship. I understand the decision. I think all parties involved in this were anxious and were owed that decision. Where we go from here is we move forward to remedy the problem that's out there, the work that's been done. There was a notice of violation formally sent to the property owner. I think that went out last week. That gives specific details on the performances that need to be met to kind of bring that property back to its original condition and the revegetation, and we'll move forward with that. I think in a related sort of question is, what do we do in the future to make sure stuff like this doesn't happen again? And both Gary Horton and our staff, our teams have been working together to kind of come up with some viable solutions to make sure our permitting processes better integrate with one another. With the help of Tom Fisher, we have internally reorganized into some work groups that take the departments that are really involved in the activities that result in building things, that being engineering and planning and building and public works and transportation, and forming work groups that, you know, will better coordinate all of our projects. So I think that's going to help in terms of communication. We're proposing to take a look at some of our permits and our permitting system that relate to grading. On Wednesday, as soon as Wednesday, Council is going to be looking at a temporary zoning ordinance that looks specifically at how we address grading proposals or requests outside of normal development permit applications. And what we're going to bring to Council is a proposal that for the next 6 months, while we work on fine-tuning some of these systems and permitting processes, that grading permits outside, again, outside of a normal building permit or construction permit that planning and engineering and building would issue, that those would go through a low-impact permit if that work crossed a certain threshold. And what we're proposing to begin that discussion with on Wednesday, that threshold would be if a proposal is involving more than 40 cubic yards, and that would be akin to roughly 4 to 5 dump truck loads of dirt, or if someone is changing the grade of their property in excess of 2 feet, it would go through a low-impact permit. And probably everybody's familiar with it, but if they're not, a low-impact permit is akin to an administrative conditional use permit. That low-impact permit or that administrative conditional use permit would allow the planning community development director to remand an application like that to the planning commission for a public review of that if conditions warranted that. This won't affect any agriculture. It won't affect people who are out there gardening. You know, we've had questions about that. This would affect any time there would be a request to do earthwork beyond that 40 cubic yard threshold outside of a building permit, a construction permit that came out of a conditional use permit or a final site plan, something like that. So what we want to do is put in place a system of better communication and more predictable permitting that prevents these sort of things from happening. And again, predictable both for the property owner, hopefully, and for the public in the affected neighborhood.
Okay, Pat, need to leave it there. Thanks for your time. 8:30 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour. Well, the Utah State Legislature entering its final week on the phone with an update from Capitol Hill is Park City and Wasatch County's Representative Tim Quinn. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. So how much time do we have?
We'll try to get as much as we can, but probably no more than 15 minutes. I'm in the middle of a Judiciary Committee meeting now. I just stepped out for a moment.
Okay. So I heard yesterday that lawmakers would be funding public education with a 4% increase in the weighted pupil unit, as the governor had originally requested. Is that a done deal?
It appears to be. Now, I'm not a member of the Executive Appropriations Committee, but those were the numbers that we were given yesterday. A 4% WPU, as well as funding growth. I mean, that we have to fund growth, but we were able to do a 4% WPU on top of that, and I think it speaks well to the Education Appropriations Committee, which I'm not on, by the way, but they did a great job.
Right, and so that's at the expense of what then, or is it just using the one-time money to fund this?
I don't think it's the expense of, at the expense necessarily of anything. We did have higher revenues than we had than they had originally estimated that we would have. So they took the vast majority of new money, I think it's in the 65% range, and put it toward public education. So two-thirds of every dollar that came in that was new, we put it towards education.
Yeah, so hoping to avoid a ballot initiative from the Our Schools Now group to raise taxes by 7/8%, they say that would raise some $750 million every year for education. We had heard early on that lawmakers would be scouring the budget for savings, looking to reform taxes to find that new money. So has that happened? Because it doesn't sound like we have any new money here. We're just appropriating more of what we've got.
No, this was new. The vast majority of that, well, certainly to get from about a 2.5% range to a 4% range on PPU, that was new money. There hasn't been, at least, you have to understand the process, and I'm not suggesting that I understand it completely, but it's broken down into different sub-appropriation committees, and the one that I was on is about a $1 billion budget. It's the government, executive government offices, as well as criminal justice. We didn't have the opportunity to find many savings there. Other committees did, but I will tell you, we are in the middle of a big discussion in the House about tax reform, and that covers everything you can imagine, from sales tax, property tax, income tax, credits, exemptions, everything. And I stood up last night in our caucus meeting and said, look, if we're going to talk about tax reform and the revenue side of this, we must take a serious look at our spending side. And I think we have the commitment to do that before the next session starts next year.
And what about restoring the state's portion of sales tax on food? Is that going to happen?
It is part of the discussion. We are at the very end of this session, so what will happen between now and then, I couldn't even guess. But I will tell you this, if that becomes part of a serious conversation and we do restore sales tax to food, there would be some offset so that the lower-income people would not be negatively affected by this. It would be revenue neutral to them, meaning that we would do some type of grocery tax credit, or we would tie the things that are not raised in food tax to the WIC staple list, but probably we would do a grocery tax credit. It would not harm the lower-income people that we're concerned about.
And is this...
And coupled with that, Leslie, I'm sorry, I didn't mean... What's coupled with that, if part of the discussion is if we do raise sales tax on food, we would lower the overall state sales tax on everything, so that while we might be paying more, and when I say more, these are small numbers, when we might be paying more on food, we'd be paying less on everything else that we purchased.
Yeah, so is this kind of a way, though, to, you know, I mean, if you have more kids, you've got more mouths to feed and maybe buying more food, so a way to maybe have them pay some of their fair share?
That grocery tax credit that we've talked about, and this is a new concept for us here in Utah, it would be based probably, again, nothing's in stone yet, it would be based on the income as well as how many dependents are in the house. Because obviously if you have more children and you're low income, you spend a disproportionate amount of your dollars on food. And the more men have to feed, the greater. So there would be a tax credit based on children, but it would only be for lower-income people.
We haven't heard much about charter school funding this session. Can you tell us what's happening there?
You know, you're right. We haven't heard much about charter school funding either. So other than just the overall increase in education spending, I wouldn't say that there's much specific about charter schools in this session.
All right. And we had also seen a bill, Senate Bill 80, that talked about equalizing the Board of Education and voted leeway levies. Has that moved on or did that die in committee, or where are we at with that?
That is Senator Fillmore's bill, and I went to Senator Fillmore and told him, I said, I cannot support this bill. The two districts that I represent, I don't think they're in favor of it, and I'm not in favor of it. And I went and spoke to the committee chair yesterday that bill's sitting in, and it is sitting. I think the best way to describe it is we will run out of time before that bill passes both chambers. I think it's passed the Senate. Has it even come before the House? I don't think it's going to have time to do so.
Yeah. Any idea how that would have impacted at least the school districts you represent in Wasatch County and Park City?
It would not have taken money away from them. What it would have done is, as new monies come in, we would get, Wasatch and Park City would get a smaller amount than other districts would. The lower performing, not the lower performing, lower funded districts in the state would receive a disproportionate amount of new money. So nothing would be taken away. It would just be added to more slowly for Wasatch and Park City. Unless, that's why I told Senator Fillmore I couldn't support that.
Yeah. The budget's supposed to be approved by noon today, according to the legislative rules. Will it be, or?
I think the budget will be, but there's then a bill called the Bill of Bills at the end of the session, which kind of really finalizes the base budget and the new money budget. So that will not be today. That will be, I believe, Wednesday of next week. But probably not sure how to describe this, but the new money portion, the building blocks is what they're calling it, the building blocks of this year's budget would be approved today, I believe.
All right. The Salt Lake Tribune's Paul Raleigh writing today that with the proposed changes, Utah's liquor reforms once again taking one step forward and two steps back, continuing, as he wrote, an 82-year tradition of screwing things up all in the name of reform. Ouch. What's your response? Are you guys doing a better job?
I'm not sure that I would agree with that editorialization of 82-year history of screwing things up. Utah's the number one tourist destination as a state, number one state tourist destination in the country. Obviously, some would argue that we could do better if our liquor laws were different, but we have done a great job with our tourism industry. I did speak to the sponsor of that bill. It's a large bill. I think it's 108 pages long. There's a lot of moving parts to it. But one of the things I did ask, and there's a lot of names attached to the Zion Wall or the Zion Curtain, and now a new Zion, I think they're referring to it in the papers, a Zion Moat. And I asked the sponsor, I said, if we pass this bill, does it mean that every Zion Curtain comes down and a Zion Moat has to be created, or can the establishments choose which one they want? He said, no, they would have the choice. So I think that's a good provision. If people don't like the new Zion's Moat, which is not my term, the media's, and they prefer the Zion's Curtain, they could stick with that. But this is an overhaul of our alcohol regulations. Like I said, it's a big bill. We have 4.5 days left in this session. We may run out of time before this moves through the entire cycle as well.
Yeah. What about the bill that would the clause that would drop the blood alcohol content from 0.08% to 0.05%? Do you support that?
I did, and here's why. I did not at first glance, but after I dove into the data and realized that well over 100 countries, most of them in Europe, matter of fact, I think every European country, but Malta and parts of Great Britain, their BAC levels are either 5% or even lower. And in a lot of those countries, the data show that they drink more than the people of the United States do. But yet their fatal crashes are much less than ours. And I'm not going to stand here and say that's a direct result of a lower blood alcohol level, but it is a contributing factor. So when you look at the data, Australia also much lower than ours. When you look at the data and you look at the historical data from these other countries, and when they lowered their rate and when we lowered our level a few years ago from 0.10 to 0.08, this bill could and should reduce fatal crashes somewhere between 11% and 17%.
Well, let's hope so. And I agree that I don't think anybody out there wants drunk drivers on the road. Any concern, though, that I'm guessing that, you know, what we're seeing, the Europeans are drinking at home, maybe not at the bars anymore. Perhaps we see an uptick in Uber and public transportation rates.
We could. And certainly Uber and Lyft and other industries or other businesses that will come into that industry in the coming years. Could be a great benefit to those who choose to go out and drink and use that service as opposed to getting behind the wheel. I think that'd be a great thing.
Finally, I just wanted to ask you about the Tourism Marketing Fund. I think it was $21 million based for the current year based on past performance. Given the amazing performance we saw in tourism last year, will that amount be going up this year?
We had about a 200-page, or I'm sorry, a 200-line item look at new revenue and the distribution of that new revenue just yesterday. If I'm not mistaken, Leslie, and I think I'm right, but please don't make me sign anything in blood, I think that we increased that by $3 million this year.
Okay. All right, Tim, anything else you'd like to add? Anything you're working on that you'd like or your constituents to know about?
There is a bill that passed the House yesterday or the day before, I can't remember, unanimously that'll be presenting in the Senate committee hopefully on Monday, and hopefully we have time to get it through the Senate as well, that would prevent private people using public funds. And a lot of people would scratch their head and say, well, that's common sense, but it's not been the practice in the state. You may remember a headline in the paper back in January where the executive director of the Utah League of Cities and Towns had to resign because he had been using a government-funded credit card to purchase tickets, airline tickets, to go see his son play basketball in California with the intention, I assume, of reimbursing. Well, after a state audit was done, there was some $11,000-plus that had not been reimbursed. The accounting was very sloppy. Many times the reimbursements took 6 to 9 months to come in. I just think it's a bad precedent to set. So I've ran a bill, and like I said, it passed unanimously in the House to where, if as a private citizen, you cannot use public funds for any private expenditure. So that's a bill that I think has great legs and should get through the Senate before the end of the session.
Okay, we'll check back with you once it ends. Tim, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
That's State Representative Tim Quinn representing the Park City Municipal Area as well as Wasatch County. You're listening to Local News Hour on KPCW. It's 8:49. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the Local News Hour on KPCW. Partnering with a number of community organizations, the Park City School District bringing Resilience Week to the community next week. In the studio with details, I have Park City School District Intervention Specialist Sam Walsh along with author Fatima Doman. Good morning to both of you, ladies.
Good morning, Leslie. Pleasure to be here.
So, Sam, let's start with you. Maybe you can just tell us, what is Resilience Week?
Yes. So it's a brand new multi-day outreach effort that the school district is partnering with Connect, Summit County, and the Speedy Foundation to provide 3 award-winning films that deal with the topic of resilience. So on Monday night at the Park City Lecture Hall from 5:30 to 7:30, we're going to be screening Hope Lives, Preventing Teen Suicide, followed by an adult and student panel. And then on Tuesday at the Jim Santee Auditorium, a screening of Paper Tigers from 6 to 8 p.m. And Fatima is going to be speaking about her authentic strengths, which I'll let her talk a little bit more about. And then on Wednesday from 5:30 to 7:30 back at the high school lecture hall, we're going to be screening the film Resilience, The Biology of Stress and the Science of Hope.
All right. So, Fatima, you've just concluded some training with school district employees to do what?
I did. I trained 27 of their nurses, counselors, PE, and health teachers in resilience training. So I'm a resilience coach. I use the science of positive psychology, and also we teach these people about the strengths of character that have been studied over the past 20 years. And so I took them through this resilience training. They're rolling it out to ages grades K through 12. Throughout the entire school district. And a lot of high school students have already taken the training, and we're getting a lot of positive feedback that students are really opening up. They're talking about their strengths of character. They're talking about how to use them to boost their resilience in life, especially in the wake of some very tragic events this year at Park City High School.
Well, explain, if you would, a little bit more. I mean, how do you build strength and resilience and grit.
Right. So resilience is basically the ability to bounce back from adverse situations. And one of the ways that you can build resilience is to discover your strengths of character and to learn how to use them consistently in your life. So there's a free report that people can access. They can go to my website. It's AuthenticStrengths, and that's plural. AuthenticStrengths.com. Scroll down the landing page. There's an orange bar. Click on that. Take the free strengths survey, it says. And you can discover immediately your own unique strengths profile. We're having these students do this. They're discovering their top strengths, and then they're exploring ways to use them consistently. The research shows there are over 300 research studies conducted globally that show that when people discover and use their strengths daily, that they experience significant boosts in happiness, life satisfaction, resilience overall. Their energy levels go up.
Yeah, so, I mean, are you encouraging people then to build on those strengths or maybe lift up some of those that they're not so strong in?
Well, really to build on their top strengths. That's really the powerful aspect of it, is to discover your top strengths, use them consistently, and build upon them. But also sometimes people choose to boost lower strengths as well.
Yeah. So talk a little bit. What are the strengths we're talking about?
So we have strengths like love, perseverance, kindness, leadership, teamwork, hope, optimism. So these are strengths that there are 24 of them. Scientists identified them by looking at cultures around the world. So we know that they are truly universal. And you can discover your top strengths if you go to our website and take a look.
All right. And as you mentioned, I mean, the outcome of being resilient and having some grit, I mean, you say happiness. What are some of the other
The other strengths?
Mm-hmm.
So, or the results?
The outcome.
The outcomes. So definitely we know that energy and engagement are boosted. So we know that this has something to do with achievement as well, academic achievement in schools, and then also achievement in work situations. We also know that life satisfaction and resilience and an overall sense of happiness is boosted. And this is an exciting study, by the way. It's been conducted more than once, a study similar to this that came out with the same outcomes. I think it's so significant because it showed that if people would just look at their top strengths, choose one to focus on. So, for example, my top strength is gratitude. I would choose to focus on that strength every single day for even just 1 week and do something to express gratitude each day for 1 week. The results are that people experience a significant mood boost. And that depression and anxiety levels drop significantly.
So how do we know if we're successful with all of this? Sam, you see it in the number of students coming to you? Or?
Absolutely. And just we've just recently been trained. But what's really cool, and I was telling Fatima about this yesterday, is just in my daily practice with students, I'm having them take the survey, asking them what their top strengths are, and then specifically having them narrow in on those top strengths and asking them whether that student's depressed or feeling suicidal or struggling with a life problem, asking them to use what strength is going to help you get through this situation. And I'm really seeing kids take ownership that they actually possess those necessary skills inside with some help and guidance that they are able to learn to persevere and get through these tough times. So I really see our job as the school to give kids the skills to be able to handle their own problems versus relying on other people. So I really see them empowered and able to stand up for themselves and feel good about themselves to know that they do possess the qualities to be healthy and well.
Yeah. You know, and the first thing that came to my mind when I was reading resilience and grit, I was thinking of the start times. You know, we're talking about moving the start times back later. And I thought, well, this is resiliency. This is getting up early in the morning and persevering. And the two aren't the same.
Sure. Well,
we're talking about sleep and we're talking about being strong. I mean,
right.
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, the whole conversation of resiliency and grit is getting through challenges, being able to get through, to be able to manage change. And that's part of life. Adults have to manage that. But we have to do a better job teaching our kids how do you manage change and how do you manage difficult situations.
Sam, I know the district made a huge push for the SHARP survey permission slips for people to get those back. Did you see a better?
Absolutely. And we're actually still collecting some of those. They are due next week for the remainder of the students. So we really want to get parents to sign those permission slips because it's the best way to get accurate data about risk factors that are affecting our students here in Park City. So we want to encourage all parents. But so far, we are seeing a very good success rate and return rate on those permission slips.
And there's always been kind of this, you know, are kids just, are they being honest?
Yeah.
And has there been some type of education towards, you know, that how important it is that they are honest responses?
Absolutely. Bach Harrison that administers the survey, they actually, I believe it's, they have six protective factors that they are able to wean out in the survey if people are being dishonest. So if they're finding in these six measures that they're looking at that they don't consider it a valid survey, then that's not included. So they do a really good job making sure we're getting accurate data about behaviors and choices that our kids are actually making.
Okay. So Fatima, your book is local books?
Right.
You bookstore,
can get it
online?
You can get it on Amazon. You can get it at Dolly's Bookstore. And actually, Dolly's Bookstore will have books there when I do the presentation after the screening of Paper Tigers, which is Tuesday, March 7th from 6 until 8 p.m. in the Santee Auditorium here at the Park City Library downtown.
Okay. Anything else you two wanted to say?
Great. Well, come on out. All events are free. And your family is welcome. Again, Monday and Wednesday, the films are 5:30 to 7:30 with panels at the high school. And Tuesday, the screening is at 6 o'clock at the Jim Santee Auditorium.
All right,
so we hope to see you there.
All right, Sam, Fatima, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.